Nell Bernstein is the coordinator of the San Francisco Children of Incarcerated Parents Partnership, and she's also the author of the new book, Burning Down the House, The End of Juvenile Prison. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. So, Nell, we just heard about the children of incarcerated people and how much the incarceration affects the entire family. And you've written extensively about the effects of incarceration on children whose parents are incarcerated. So since you started working on this, what, like 2 decades ago, I think it is now.
Around 2000.
Yeah. So what changes have you seen? What changes have been made to actually help kids? How is the system changing to be more sensitive to kids' needs?
Well, I think the first tremendous change that's happened is the children have become much more visible. I mean, a Google search in 2000 when I started looking at this revealed very few responses. But now there are programs, there's research, there's just a level of understanding that incarceration does affect the kids. And it's hard to grasp how much that was not the case before. How many kids I talked to who had been left behind in empty apartments.
Like their parents are arrested and the kids are just left there.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes they would come home after school and find an empty apartment, but sometimes police would just step over them. And police have talked about this, too. So visibility is the change I've seen nationally. And then most of the changes in how public systems deal with the kids have happened at the local level. That's what we do with SFCIP, the organization that you mentioned. And we organize our work around a Bill of Rights for children of incarcerated parents that's been picked up all across the country. And for us, it's really been a matter of establishing relationships with the police, the jail, but also public health, mental health, the school district we're now beginning to talk with, to increase awareness and begin to recognize the unique needs of these kids.
And what do you think, you know, obviously some progress has been made. What do you think we still need to work on in terms of really recognizing that when a parent is arrested, there's an innocent victim here, which is the kid who loses that parent?
Well, I think that, you know, we've made tremendous progress, for example, around the time of arrest. San Francisco just formalized a departmental general order that is excellent, and I think is going to be used as a model for.
And what is that? What's the order essentially?
Well, we spent a lot of time working with police and child welfare to balance it, so that kids don't get left alone, but at the same time they don't automatically get dropped off at the children's shelter if grandma is down the street and perfectly able to care for them. So the police and child welfare now work together. It acknowledges that just because you're arrested, you don't lose your parental rights immediately, which was not acknowledged before. There was a sense that who cares what they say? You know, they're being hauled off. And kids who were taken to the shelter often felt like they were being arrested. So it balances safety and psychic safety. And now we're moving into training so that officers really understand how they're perceived by children. I feel like we've also made tremendous progress with the jail. We've moved from window visiting for children, the glass and the telephones, which is just devastating, incomprehensible for young children, to a program that offers really high quality parenting education and contact visits. So those are the kinds of areas, and there's more than I can go into where progress has been made. I think that the real challenge is thinking about kids and families when we write laws that establish sentences and then when we impose individual sentences. I mean, that's really the elephant in the living room. We've made some progress in San Francisco. The probation department has implemented a family impact statement so that the paperwork they submit to the court by necessity includes some information about the kids. But I think we have a long way to go in including the impact on the next generation in our overall criminal justice policy.
And really incorporating that into the way that we do criminal justice. I'm Holly Kernan. You're listening to Cross Currents, and we're speaking with Nell Bernstein, who's coordinator of the San Francisco Children of Incarcerated Parents Partnership. She's also the author of Burning Down the House, The End of Juvenile Prison. And Nell, one of the really shocking and alarming things that we know statistically now is that if a child's parent has been incarcerated, the chances are so much higher that that child will have a run-in with the law as well. So what are some of the solutions to end this kind of domino effect, this cycle?
So that's a tricky one because that's both true and not true. For a long time, there was a statistic circulating that a child of an incarcerated parent was 6 times more likely to be incarcerated herself than her peers. Somebody finally sat me down with a calculator and showed me that given the high rate of incarceration, that was impossible. It would be more than 100%. I think the best way to put it is that children of incarcerated parents are more likely to get into trouble with the justice system if we do nothing, if we reach out to them in no way, if all the public systems that take control of their lives ignore them, then yes, they become extremely vulnerable children. But we don't have to do that. And I've seen so many families where one young person may go on to prison, the other is a mortgage broker. So I just feel like we also need to be careful about predetermination.
And so, Nell, your new book, Burning Down the House, The End of Juvenile Prison, is all about the incarceration of young people, many of whom did have parents who went through the system. And you talk about the system, you really studied it, and you said, you know, you went into this project of writing this book thinking that you would come out with some suggestions for reform. But what you really come out with is the idea that this is a broken system. Can you tell us why you think it's so broken?
Yeah. I mean, there were sort of two legs that conclusion stands on. One is the research. A kid who is incarcerated as a juvenile becomes twice as much likely as another kid who's committed the exact same acts, but for whatever reason doesn't get locked up, twice as likely to become an adult prisoner. So you have a system that is not only not helping, it's fostering the problem it's supposed to solve. So it's not just bad for kids, it's really endangering the public. That's one thing. The other thing is every kid I talked to, when I asked them what rehabilitated you, or for lack of a better word, what dehabilitated you, talked about relationships. The beginning of delinquency was almost always connected to some kind of grief or loss, the death of a grandmother, the incarceration of a father, and not getting support around that loss. And when they talked about coming out of delinquency, they always talked about a lasting connection with an adult they could trust. And you just really can't build those kinds of connections in a locked environment.
And basically what you've found in studying how we incarcerate young people is that the way that the prison system works is you're essentially severing the ties with their existing families, which is one of the most counterproductive things that you can do.
I mean, that's by definition what it does. It literally puts walls between kids and their families and kids and the rest of it.
But there are a lot of examples, I mean, particularly here locally, where that system is really changing.
Yeah. I mean, that's what's really promising, is that we've seen nationwide a 40% drop in the number of kids behind bars. And when you look at the California Youth Authority, we've gone from a system that held over 10,000 kids to one that has a few hundred now over the course of a little more than a decade. And that would have been inconceivable a decade ago. The question is, what are we replacing that system with? And my sense is that it really varies from county to county. San Francisco is at the forefront of coming up with community-based alternatives that recognize kids' needs for relationship with their family and also with other helping adults. In other counties, my sense is kids are just kind of being shunted into local juvenile halls.
But there's a lot that's going on here, say in San Francisco, that's really trying to, once you find out that a kid is either acting out or traumatizing somebody else or experiencing trauma, that they've got sort of community-based programs where people stay in their family, in their community, but are getting some help.
Yeah, and it's important that you use the word trauma, because the level of trauma that you see inside a locked facility is just, I mean, it's like walking into a trauma ward. And there are a number of organizations in San Francisco that are beginning to recognize that and take what's called a trauma-informed approach. The way I put it when I talked about it in the book is, you know, it's a question of asking not just what did you do, little criminal, but what happened to you to take you to this place. And San Francisco is getting much, much better at asking what happened to you and what do you need to heal from that.
And you also in the book really implicate all of us in this kind of growth of our juvenile justice system, of our juvenile prison system, because we have this notion that it's other kids, not my kid, but you know, you talk about the vast majority of the kids that are there for these pretty minor infractions, not the major assault or murder.
Yeah, and especially those who enter for the first time. I do find there's a perception that to wear that jumpsuit and be locked in a cell, you have to at least commit a carjacking, if not, you know,
something much
a mass
more heinous,
murder.
Yeah.
But we're talking about graffiti. We're talking about, you know, in Los Angeles, police officers standing two blocks from the schools and giving truancy tickets to kids who were late, who were trying to go to school, which then turned into warrants and then would get them locked up. We're really talking about not just nonviolent offenses, but very low-level offenses. And we're also talking about tremendous inequities in who gets locked up for those offenses. I mean, overall, a black teenager is 4.5 times more likely not just to get locked up, but to get locked up for the identical act as his white counterpart. And I think that contributes to again, this idea that these are other kids. But, you know, California is, however you want to put it, a majority-minority state. And even if it weren't, I think that we like to think that we care for all children as our own. But incarcerating them makes them so invisible that it's very easy to comfort ourselves with myths.
And you say it also makes kids much more dangerous when they do eventually come out and come back into our
community. Yeah, I mean, that's the irony is that what's good for kids is often pitted against public safety, but what's good for kids enhances public safety. Being locked up as a kid is the greatest predictor that any individual will go on to become an adult prisoner. So it's obviously working against its central aim.